marijuana retail production and processing, Ms. Claire Lust.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, and good evening to everyone. One moment here as I share my screen. All right, so this evening's study session is on marijuana production, processing, and retail. I'll give a brief introduction and some context. Sounds like I'm echoing a lot. Better? Okay. I will, no, that's pretty bad. I can hear it from my office.
Okay, right, I'm just going to try again.
Get this started. So I'll give a brief introduction and some context, and then I will be handing it over to Chief Brooks to talk about public safety and Mr. Johnson to talk through revenue, and then I will loop back and cover land use. So to get started, in the state of Washington, marijuana production, processing, and retail are governed by RCW 6950, which is the Uniform Controlled Substances Act, 6951A, which is medical cannabis, and then WAC 314-55, which is marijuana licenses. Back in 2011, Initiative 502 was passed, which set up a comprehensive regulatory approach permitting state licensed producers, processors, and retailers. Per the Attorney General's office, cities can pass local regulations that are stricter than state regulations. As of 2016, there were some updates at the state level, namely that medical marijuana and recreational marijuana were sort of pulled together into the same regulatory framework, and the licensing is now regulated and enforced under the Washington State Liquor and Cannabis Board. According to the Washington State Institute for Public Policy, between the fourth quarter of 2012 and the fourth quarter of 2016, the number of licensed and active marijuana businesses increased from around 50 to almost 700. In the end of 2016, there's an average of 9 full-time employees per business, with an average wage of $16.45 an hour, the median wage a bit lower than that, leading us to see there's some outliers on the high end wage-wise. And those numbers are similar across production, processing, and retail businesses. Zooming in on Clark County, these are the active businesses in the county, including Battleground, Vancouver, and unincorporated areas. So as you can see, more businesses in the city of Vancouver than other areas, and pretty even balance between production slash processing and retail facilities. Sorry about the formatting. That seems to be something that is different from when I was looking at this earlier. And with that, I will pass it along to Chief Brooks.
There we go. Good evening, Council. I am just returning from the Washington Association of Chiefs of Police and Sheriff's Conference that was held over at Tri-Cities this weekend, and I got to talk to a lot of different chiefs of police and sheriffs about
John,
marijuana
Chief,
because
Chief,
we were coming to this particular
Turn your volume up, John.
What's that?
There you go.
Now we can hear you.
Do I just need to speak louder?
There you go.
Because I can use my big boy voice. So with regard to studies having to do with retail marijuana, there are no large-scale studies dealing with retail marijuana or even processing and production and how it affects communities. Most of the studies that have been done have been surrounding just overall legalization. So, and I did check, with several different large groups that drug enforcement and drug regulation is all that they do, including liquor and cannabis and the Drug Task Force and the Northwest HIDA. So the one thing in talking to them is every community is so different that it is really hard to say that you can get an apples to apples comparison. So go on to the next slide. So what we were able to find is some things, just overall trends with regard to calls for service. So you see here a list of the top five calls for service that are associated with retail establishments. Now that doesn't mean that these are the only calls for services, but those are the ones that percolate to the top most often across the board. Same with service to minors. So go on to the next slide. So I was able to find some data with regard to marijuana sales, retail sales in Vancouver. Vancouver's fortunate they have their own crime analyst that could start drilling down and getting data. And so I picked two specific businesses. One was Main Street Marijuana and the other was Sticky's Pot Shop. Now, these are two retail establishments in Clark County, but you can see that they're different in terms of some of the call load that they experience. Here at Main Street Marijuana, you can see that they would have a much larger call load as compared to the surrounding businesses. Whereas if you look at Sticky's Pot Shop, which will be the next slide, their call load is actually a lot more consistent than their surrounding businesses. And really, what that looks like is it's just the geographic area of where these places are located. So that it's not really good to be able to predict what would happen in our community because one comes, our community is going to be different than where these places are located. And there's also the question of these two places are located not that far from one another, yet they have different results. So let's go on to the next slide.
Chief, on that, Ron here, the that's since 2016 and the eight calls that they have, which doesn't seem like very much, but eight calls, and that's for alarms or break-ins or anything, huh?
Yeah, I didn't drill down into the specific calls that they have. I can do that, but I was just trying to get a sense of, from a public safety perspective, how often would the police be called to a location like that? So, with regard to cannabis and the production and processing, there is no formalized data at all. I have gotten a ton of anecdotal information from chiefs of police, and overwhelmingly, they've said that the production and processing is had no problem whatsoever. Those places tend to stay off the radar screen. They don't advertise their presence. They don't have people coming in to purchase anything. So as a result, they don't really have any sort of outlying problems with public safety. The occasional burglary, but certainly no more so than any other business. And anecdotally speaking, with regard to retail establishments, most of the chiefs that I've talked with, and these are just the stories that they've told me, these places actually are locked down and run pretty squared away. And so they don't get that many calls. It's very equivalent. What it was described to me as very equivalent is just having a bar in your town in terms of the kind of calls for service that you would get at a particular business. So they didn't, you know, bemoan the fact of retail marijuana creating all kinds of problems. And so they've talked about other businesses that they've had many more difficulties with that weren't retail marijuana. So that's kind of the anecdotal piece. there were a couple of other little side notes that were brought up to me. One was the most complaints they ever get about production and processing are odor complaints. So when they gas off in those facilities, locations that are nearby can smell that. I don't know if that's a code enforcement challenge in terms of air scrubbers or something like that. But I was talking with Claire and I put that on her radar screen as a possible something to take a look at. And the other thing with regard to retail establishments, and this is just anecdotal, I don't have data on this, and that is when retail marijuana is located or co-located with another business, oftentimes, depending on that other business will suffer based on that location where they're together. So I think as a result, you see a lot of retail establishments being in their own building, kind of separate, instead of doing the strip mall type of situation. So the last thing that I wanted to talk with you about was driving under the influence. And again, there is no data that has been done in terms of showing driving under the influence either spiking or not spiking with regard to the location of a retail establishment or a production facility. All the information is associated with legalization at a statewide level. And I've thrown some facts up there, but in the end, whether the council chooses to go one direction or another, I don't know that that those choices will affect this, because marijuana is readily available throughout the region. So I am happy to answer any questions having to do with public safety and marijuana retail or production and processing.
Thank you, Chief. Council, questions?
I had a question, but it's not serious or anything, but I was curious, since I was checked regularly by the Washington State Liquor Board, now it's liquor and cannabis, have they doubled their size, and do they do both liquor and cannabis, or how does that work? Do you know?
They do both liquor and cannabis, and they have not substantially increased. It's just they're spread a little thinner. So that's just part of what they have to do now.
Okay, thank you.
Councilor Lindsay.
Hi, Chief. This is Councilor Lindsay. The slide that you presented on the top calls that were made to retail shops, is there any way we could go back to that really quick? Okay, so so some of the top violations are, so for sale to a minor, is that right?
Yes.
Okay.
And I got that from the liquor and cannabis. They did a big study couple years after legalization took place.
Okay, thank you very much.
Councilor Day. This is Councilor Day. On the 86 items of failure to utilize or maintain traceability, I can vouch for that I visited many processing plants, and you could just walk in the door, which you're not supposed to do. You're supposed to be a locked door. They're supposed to buy and trace every plant, and these particular organizations were not doing that. So that does not surprise me. I was surprised that access was so easy to these processing plants. It's like anybody could walk in while the owner was on lunch break and take whatever they wanted, and they wouldn't even know it was gone. So that's just my recognition of your data there.
Chief, this is Rob. Chief, this is Rob Akeley. I was you stated that there's not a study or any data available on some of those usage items, but here in Ridgefield, since you've been chief, you probably have a good feel for how many youth have been maybe involved in, maybe you've caught or they've been turned in or you've encountered issues. Just I'm trying to get a feel for how often that may happen here and there, and then also for the driving under the influence. Is that something that you've run into a few times now and then, or often, or I'm just trying to get a feel for that.
Councilman, your audio is kind of muddied, so it was hard to hear the question. I know there was a question about driving under the influence. Can you repeat that just one more time? I'm trying to hear.
Sure. I'm sorry. I'll get closer to the mic. Yeah, just two questions. How many times have you run into driving under the influence of the marijuana here in Ridgefield? And youth using, like, underage youth, do you run into that very often here in Ridgefield?
Yes. So with regard to underage marijuana possession, that is not uncommon. So it just as is not uncommon to run into underage citizens having beer or some other type of alcohol. So there's just more access to it than there has been before. And then with regard to driving under the influence, most of the things that we do with regard to driving under the influence happen to be with alcohol. However, many of those rests, when we end up drawing blood for them, and we don't always draw blood, sometimes we use the breathalyzer, but when we draw blood, then we're seeing results consistent with what the state statute or the state data is that there's a lot of what they call polydrug use, meaning more than one type of drug is on board. We don't have a way right now to test for anything other than alcohol unless we take and do a blood draw. And doing a blood draw is a complicated situation with regard to DUI enforcement. But sometimes it's the only way we can do that. So to answer your question, we have seen it. I would not say it's happening all over the place. And when it's just marijuana, it makes it just that much harder to test for.
Thank you.
Any more questions, Council? Oh, Councilor Zimmer.
Hi, Chief. Thank you for that presentation. So you mentioned that there's more access regarding teens. I have teenagers, and so this is obviously something that I definitely am watching for and looking out for, and have some concerns. But do you think that there's more access because it's been legalized, or have you seen once it was legalized and stores started popping up, these retail stores? As there were more and more, did you see that happening? Did you notice that more with underage access, I guess? Does that make sense?
So I would preface this with saying, I don't have specific hard data on that. I can give you my anecdotal experience, which is we see underage participants that have marijuana, that they're in possession of marijuana, and oftentimes their attitude is, it's not a big deal, it's legal. And we have to remind them, well, it's not legal for you because you're under 21. I think legalization has impacted attitudes, but then when you throw in the fact that there's not the taboo and people don't have to take and, you know, hide around in the park at, you know, 10 o'clock at night looking for the dude that'll sell them something, and they can go and find it a lot more readily. It just creates a lot more access.
Okay, thanks. That makes sense. And I know there's not a lot of data. I think my concern, it being right here in Ridgefield, and I'm not obviously saying no, this is, you know, we're looking at it, but my concern is it being closer to our kids and feeling like it may be a little bit easier access for kids in the community here. Do you think that's, and I know it would just probably be your opinion, but do you think that if in smaller towns such as Ridgefield, not necessarily Vancouver, where there's obviously more businesses or more retail, do you find that, or maybe I guess believe that kids in a smaller community or where that is in a community would have more access and availability and potentially get access to that versus towns that do not have that?
You know, Councilor, I would just be purely speculating. And so I'm hesitant because I know when I start speculating, I start getting into my own opinions, and my opinions don't belong here. I do know that there are small towns that are our size that have these type of facilities, and there's some that don't. But in the end, they are available regionally. So whether we have marijuana in our town or whether we don't have marijuana town, there still will always be marijuana very close at hand.
Thanks, Chief.
Any other questions?
I have one more question. This is Rob Akeley, Chief Brooks, about access. It reminds me, I watched a very long TV show about, I think it was for Utah, and the mayor there was stating a 10% reduction of use in the youth in schools because when they legalized marijuana, it cut out the drug dealers, which the youth had access to. It put those drug dealers out of business. So my question is, I know we don't have a lot of drug dealers here that you've probably caught, but do you see that? Do you see that the sales of drugs by the drug dealers are down now?
Wow, that's a great question, and I would love to take and follow up with the Drug Task Force and just ask that if they're seeing a decrease in lower level drug dealers. If I was going to speculate, I would say it would just be different what they're selling. If one product is a lot easier to get, then they're just going to switch to the products that are more difficult to get.
Thank you.
Questions? Any more questions? Okay. Ms. Les, did you have anything further?
All right. I will go ahead and pass it over to Mr. Johnson now.
Thank you, Claire, and thank you, Council. If you can go to the next slide, please. So revenue and the formula that they're using to do revenue sharing is very complex and depends on several different factors. Early on, MRSC was willing to estimate revenues for the following year for each jurisdiction. They've since stopped doing that because of the complexity within the formula. Basically, there's a couple different things to consider. To receive any distributions for marijuana revenue from the excise taxes, a jurisdiction cannot prohibit any of the three different phases, production, processing, or retail. If they ban any one of those, then they're not eligible for any distributions, even if they have one of the other or two of the other phases within their jurisdiction. The revenue formula is based on a couple different things. Retailers in each jurisdiction, 30% of the revenue sharing for cities and counties will go to jurisdictions that have retail located within their jurisdiction. and then 70% that have any of the different and have not banned any of the three different phases will receive a payment based on per capita. 60% of the revenue goes to counties, 40% goes to cities. This year, the legislature increased the revenue share between cities and counties to $40 million total. In the past, they had promised that it would get up to that amount. This is the first year that they did that. If you can go to the next slide, please. So local revenue, Clark County sales was over $74 million from July 1st of 19 to June 30th of 20, which at 37% excise tax generated about $27.5 million in tax. The majority obviously is going to the state. You know, this was sold when it was approved as a big revenue source that would help out all locations. Really, the state is receiving the majority of that. The 2021 estimated revenues from the Liquor and Cannabis Board of what they're going to distribute this year for Clark County was about $443,000. This is the first full year that they'll be receiving distributions. Battleground, about $39,000, and Vancouver, about $460,000. For an estimate, if Ridgefield was to have all three phases approved to be located, the estimate that I kind of top of the real high level napkin type estimate is about $24,000. And where I got that, there's 10 cities that are within kind of our population range that do allow that and are getting distributions. And they range anywhere from 8,000 in population to 12,000 in population. So that's kind of where I came up with that estimate. So it's not a large amount that the city really would be eligible for. If you can go to the next slide. And that's it for revenue, unless there's any questions.
Councilor Lindsay.
Yeah, I had a question. So on the slide that showed the first slide that you had that did revenue sharing, so the total amount that gets collected, 30% of that goes back to the jurisdictions, and within that jurisdiction, 60% goes to the county and 40% goes to the city. So that means that, like, Clark County, if an unincorporated Clark County would get 100%?
Not necessarily. Again, that's why I mentioned it's very complicated. So what they look at is the jurisdictions, whether it's a city or whether it's an unincorporated county, and they look at how many retail locations are within each of those jurisdictions, and then what is the percentage of sales within those jurisdictions. And then that 30% of the 40 million, and again, 30% of 60% goes to the counties, 40% to the cities. That's all broken out by the volume of sales within each location. That's why it's so complicated to estimate this, because there's so many different factors.
I get it.
And those factors change every year depending on sales.
Okay, I get it.
It's really a hard one to kind of explain, and I probably mentioned too many factors to really make this understandable, and that's, I have a hard time kind of grasping this.
Thank you.
Councilor Day.
Mr. Johnson, so it's similar to the Public Works Trust Fund. The state can giveth, but they can taketh away anytime they want, so the distribution might not be a guaranteed thing.
That's correct.
Okay, thank you.
I had a question, Curtis, Ron Onslow. The funds may be only be distributed to jurisdictions that do not prohibit the citing of any state license. Are you saying that you have to be able to participate, you have to allow all three to be in your jurisdiction? Or it just didn't make any sense to me, because it seems like if you allow retail, then you would get, on your revenue sharing, you would get the that 30% that goes, 60% yeah. goes to county, 40% goes to cities.
The first part of your comment is correct. You cannot prohibit any of the three. That doesn't mean that you have to have all three located there, because you could authorize all three to locate in the city, but maybe no retailer wants to come in or no producer wants to come in and site there. You still are eligible for money on both different revenue sharing areas, the 30% and the 70%. In how they factor that. It's just you cannot say I'm banning one of the three, but that doesn't mean somebody has to locate there before you get that money.
Yeah, I could see that happening really easy, because there is manufacturing in Woodland and Battleground, so then the next question is if you only allow, let's say, retail. So your revenue sharing is what?
If you only allow retail and you ban production and processing, you get zero.
Oh, you get zero. Okay.
Well, that correct. You have to allow really all three sense. Of them.
Yeah, now it really makes sense. Of course, correct. In here, I just can't imagine distribution, and I doubt, at least right now, I doubt that there'd be any production. Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Any other questions for Mr. Johnson? Okay, all right. Thank you, Kirk. Kirk, do you have anything further?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that.
Did you have anything further to share?
No, I do not.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you, Kirk. Moving on here to land use, start out by talking about 2014. So in April 2014, council placed moratoria on medical and recreational marijuana uses. As with other moratoria, staff was directed to propose code updates on the topic. The code proposed in 2014 would have allowed production, processing, and collective medical gardens serving 2 to 10 patients in the industrial zone, and it would have prohibited retail. A couple other features of the proposed code would require that all operations be located indoors, require additional odor control technologies, and require secure storage during non-business hours. One of the goals of the proposed code was to ensure that marijuana production and processing uses would appear similar to other light industrial uses with no visible impacts. And of course, the code required state licensing and prohibited these uses within 1,000 feet of elementary and secondary schools, rec centers, childcare facilities, public parks, transit centers, libraries, and arcades. Ultimately, council did not adopt the code proposed in 2014. And now we're in 2021. There are several options up for discussion. As far as processing, production, and or retail uses go, one option is to allow some or all of those in appropriate zoning districts. I do have a couple local examples from other jurisdictions. So in Vancouver, production and processing are permitted in the industrial districts. Retail is permitted in the commercial districts. In Clark County, production and processing are allowed in the agricultural and industrial districts, as well as their business park area. Similar to Vancouver in the county, retail is allowed in the commercial districts, or at least some of the commercial districts. In Battleground, production, processing, and research are permitted in light industrial, while retail is permitted in their regional and community commercial zones. and in Woodland, production and processing are permitted in their industrial zones and retail is prohibited. Another option some cities in the state have used is to limit the total number of businesses allowed in the jurisdiction. Examples of this are in Everett and Renton, who both permit a maximum of 5 recreational marijuana businesses. The state statutes also allow a interim zoning regulation to be adopted. City of Bellingham did this. They have adopted an interim 6-month-long zoning regulation. And then, of course, prohibiting the uses, all or some of them, is also an option. Locally, in addition to Ridgefield, Camas, Washougal, and La Center, all prohibit processing, production, and retail. As a note here, you can also, as an option, differentiate between types of processing. A processor 1 is limited to drying, curing, trimming, and packaging, while a processor 2 also extracts concentrates, infuses products, or involves chemical processing. This next slide just has an example from the city of Vancouver of potential sites allowed under their current code. The blue areas are sites where production and processing would be permitted, and then the red areas are sites where retail would be permitted under their current code. If you're interested, I'm not going to show it in this presentation, but Clark County has a similar map, and it shows under their code, retail sites are located mainly in areas closer to the Vancouver city limits, and then production and processing are largely located in areas with agricultural zoning, including areas around the city of Ridgefield. So I mentioned the 1,000-foot buffering provision. This is an image I put together for the city of Ridgefield. Shows rough 1,000-foot buffers from schools, the YMCA, the library, and as many public parks as I could think of. Surely I missed a couple, but this should give you a good idea of what a sort of universal 1,000-foot buffering would look like. Again, that's the standard established by the state, is 1,000 feet from primary and secondary schools, playgrounds, rec centers, child care centers, public parks, transit centers, libraries, and arcades. Interestingly, reductions in buffering are allowed down to 100 feet, except for primary and secondary schools and public playgrounds. So you can imagine how that would reduce the buffers in some areas of this map. And of note, the buffers are measured from property line to property line, which is a sort of larger catchment area. The next image is a lot to look at, but it's instructive. This is the same buffering laid over Ridgefield zoning map. So really the area to focus on is around the junction. The light blue areas that aren't hatched over are areas of our employment zone, which is, again, sort of a light industrial office hybrid. Those are areas that are outside of that buffering zone. And then harder to see, but also there are a few red properties without buffering, and those are commercial lots that are outside of the 1,000-foot buffer zone. And there are some examples of cities in Washington that have chosen to use the buffer reduction to various degrees, you know, reduce it to 500 feet from certain establishments, do buffer reductions for production and processing, but not for retail, things like that. There's quite a bit of flexibility involved. And then the final topic for land use to touch on here is medical cooperatives. The 2014 code proposals, as I mentioned earlier, did cover medical marijuana. In 2016, the state statute on medical marijuana was updated, made a bit more restrictive, actually. So under the current state laws, medical marijuana cooperatives must be located in the property of one of the participants. These co-ops can have up to a maximum of 4 qualifying patients or providers as members. Participants can grow up to a maximum of 60 plants and possess up to 72 ounces. And none of the marijuana from a co-op can be sold to others. So they're meant to be pretty insular co-ops for medical marijuana users and providers. As with everything else that's been discussed for land use, there's a variety of outcomes for different cities have chosen. The cities that have permitted medical collectives do tend to require some sort of shielding and buffering to ensure that they do their best to fit into the surrounding area. That is all I would like to share for land use. I'm happy to take any questions.
Council, questions?
I don't have any real questions on it. I can't imagine there would ever be any distribution, so I don't even think that's an issue. And a production with the amount that's going on in the county and the city of Vancouver, I just don't see it happening either, so there's only retail. And I know I'm one of the ones that brought up the idea I didn't want them across the street from Clark College, but after seeing the success of the marijuana stores and how they're regulated, that doesn't bother me anymore. It did, but it doesn't anymore. And the medical, I don't know, I wouldn't even do mess with medical unless we allowed the others. So okay. That's where I am.
Anyone else? Councilor Day.
Ms. Les, this is Sandra Day. Department of Ecology, I don't think, has weighed in very heavily on this with soil contamination or water runoff from the inside grow operation. Plus, the odor is a big thing. I do know there is one processor that is actually able to chop up the plants after they're no longer budded and mix it in with a garden mix, and another organization sells it as gardening amendments for home gardens. So I'm not so worried about the soil contamination, although maybe I should, but the odor is still my biggest hang up about the production and processors don't have the right technology to curtail the odor that comes from these places. Not the retail, but production and processing. So that's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else have a comment?
This is Councillor. Oh.
Yeah, this is Councillor Lee Wells. Can you hear me?
A little closer.
Is it better? I'll get a little closer. I'm actually opposed to either the sales, the distribution, or all three of the above. Our community has gotten by without the potential $24,000 a year revenue from the inclusion of having one or the above part of the city. What I'm trying to say, you have to include all three to even be able to be qualified for the $24,000.
No, you misunderstood. That's not true. You can have all three, but you may not have one or two of those three that show up. You can still get the money.
Okay,
but if those people choose not to come here and apply for a permit, you're still eligible for the money.
Yes. No. I understood that. Maybe I wasn't getting that across. But this community has, in the past, not supported the sales or the use of the community as a supply source. And I think the stigma that goes along with it, Ridgefield has a really great stigma far as being supportive of values, traditional values. So personally, I'm against it. The $24,000 a year isn't going to make a difference in our budget for the city of Ridgefield, far as dollars and cents coming in to help the coffers out.
Okay. Thank you, Councillor. Anyone else have a comment?
This is Councillor Akeley. Councillor Wells brought up a question. Maybe Kirk might need to chime in on this, because I wrote me a note here that said producers, processors, and retailers all must be allowed to get revenue, the tax revenue, and if we allowed that, it would be about $24,000. I think that's what I heard. Was that correct?
Yeah, that is correct. You have to approve all three to be located within the city. They don't all need to come to the city and open, but all three need to be approved. You can't ban either of the three phases of whether it's production, processing, or retail. And just the real high level estimate was about $23,000 a year, and that's from the excise tax. That doesn't include things like property tax or regular retail sales that may come out of some sales there.
Thank you for that clarification. That's all I have.
Hi, this is Councillor Lindsay. I just wanted to echo a couple concerns that I've heard mentioned already this evening by Councillors Zimmer, Wells, and Day. I actually toured one of the processing and production facilities in Battleground. And one of the first things I noticed when I got on my car was it smelled. And this was a facility that has really high-end filtration systems. It doesn't smell on the inside, but it did smell outside. So I am concerned about the odor surrounding a facility. What are you going to put next to it? If it's downwind, if a single-family development is downwind, they're going to get, pot fumes every afternoon or something when the wind blows, and I don't think that's what we want. The council has spent a lot of time over the last few years on creating a sense of place around Ridgefield. What does Ridgefield look like? How is it different than other places in our county? How do you know that you're in Ridgefield? And I am concerned that marijuana sales don't necessarily go with what we're trying to accomplish with the placemaking of Ridgefield. When you allow the sale and distribution of a product, whatever it is, as a city, you are saying that you support, endorse, and encourage it. I mean, by allowing it, that's what you say. And then I also am concerned about the ease of access for high school and middle school students. When we were at the production facility, they create botanical, my daughter, she was talking to me, they have them in the high schools. They go in the vape pens, the little cartridges. And one of the selling points of these is that you will no longer smell like marijuana. It doesn't taste like it. So if you're a high school or middle school student, bingo, you just scored. You're not going to have to worry about smoking pot in the bathroom. No one's going to know. So that concerns me a little bit. So those are my thoughts.
Great. Thank you.
I just had one other thought, and that is Councilwoman Day said about the dirt and so forth, but there is very little on the west side of the mountains that are grown outside. Everything on the east side is contained, but not that, but there's not many on the west side of the mountains because of the amount of rain that we have. So it's not very successful when they do that on the west side.
Just a clarification, all of the grow has to be indoors, regardless of where it is, but this processor was taking their unused product after it had already budded and was able to chop it up with state approval and with another organization mix it in with soil, bag it up, and sell it at a store. So that was my point. So I don't know if anybody has ever really analyzed it for effects. Just don't know.
Okay. So staff is looking for some direction on this issue. And so we can either have staff move forward with this marijuana, or we have them not move forward. So from what I hear from Councillor Lindsay, you're a thumbs down. Councillor Onslow? You're a thumbs up. Councillor Akeley?
I'm a thumbs down.
Thumbs down?
Thumbs down.
Okay. Down. Okay.
We have the direction we need. Thank you very much. Yep. Appreciate it. And certainly now we have more information that not only we've provided for you, but we'll make sure that that information is available for our residents as well.
Great. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
With that, we will start the council meeting in about 5 minutes.